My sluggish mind churns as I try to grapple this new, warped reality into something that makes sense. Was he not dead? Did I not strangle him for long enough? Was he playing me the fool? Get up, Rave. Groaning, I roll sideways, then push to my hands and knees. Wobble. I lift my head, seeing double the tents, double the crowd, double the big, glaring ball of sun. My arms buckle and my face collides with the sand. Hawk's weapon whirls through the air, thumping to a halt beside my axe before I'm cast in his broad shadow. Get the fuck up! Snarling, I finally manage to clamber to my feet and spin. The ground tips. Heavier than I've ever felt, I stumble with the world's violent tilt, barely catching myself. Hawk stalks toward me, muscles rippling with each prowling step, his neck slashed with deep, ruddy indents to match his eyes, the whites now stained red from his choking strain, making him look wild. Rabid.
Guid,
he growls, which must mean submit because Sisa's screaming it from the sidelines.
Guid, Kolu.
Fuck you, I slur, spitting a wad of blood on the ground, my lids threatening to slam shut. And my name's Rave, you corrupt piece of shit. He grunts, lunging, cracks his fist against my jaw so fast I barely realize I'm falling, watching the strings of skulls sift by in rapid motion until I collide with the ground. All the breath erupts from my lungs, and I cough, hacking for breath, trying to scramble to my feet again. He straddles me, his dense weight packed upon my hips. I thread my hand up his right thigh and work my fingers past the gaping leather into the long slice Zaron created earlier with his rounded sword. Hawk roars, snatching my wrist, then the other. He pins them to the ground above my head, the beating gong somehow tilling the air with its harrowing throb, dashing sand into my eyes. The back of Hawk's hand collides with my cheek with such force the entire world rips sideways, my head snapping with the motion, mouth lax and caked with sand. My body shuts down from the hurt, the pain, the ability to move.
Guid.
I'd rather die than be bound to him against my will. The Fate Herder must surely know that. That creature brought me here. To this very moment, knowing I'll never submit. Meaning this is an assassination of me. Definitely should have bowed.
Guid,
he repeats, a slashing command that shreds the air. Fuck you, I puff through bloody clumps of sand. Fuck the Fate Herder. Fuck everything. A laugh crumbles up my throat as he fists my hair so tight I'm certain he's about to tear big clumps from my scalp. Using it to lift my head again, he scowls down at me. My vision splits, converges, splits again. The gong continues to beat, harder and harder, until the entire arena is a swirl of pulsing wind and sand. I continue to laugh in Huck's face, even as he raises his other hand. A shadow eclipses the sun. A roar cleaves the air. Hawk tips his head to the sky, his hand still set to strike me as his saber scythe soars into view, dragging its monstrous claw through the crisscross of skull-laden ropes and ripping them skyward. Skulls rain, pelting the sand like mini moonfalls. Folks scream, but my pulse screams louder. I'm certain I'm seeing things as Rygun drops upon the crater's lip with a ground-shuddering thump, as Khan uses Rygun's ropes to propel himself down into the dip, shirtless but for his own Malmer hanging around his neck, his beautiful face ripped with the wrath of a million maddened men. I'm certain I'm seeing things as Khan's boots thump upon the ground, as he crunches his hands into fists, stalking toward me with footfalls that seem to shake the world, while his lips shape words I recognize, the tendons in his neck straining as he wrestles with Baldur's dialect. I'm certain I'm seeing things as the crater begins to shake, a slash of relief almost severing me in two despite the massive crack weaving across the ground, despite the way those ember eyes are locked on me, scarcely dressed, sprawled across the sand beneath another male intent on claiming the right to bind with me. Probably not a good time to commend him on his hunting skills, but damn, it's tempting. Rave. Chapter 42. Khan dominates the crater, each long stride hailed by another shake of the ground, his body a tower of rippling brawn dappled with sweat that glistens in the sun, his scars pale against the rusty surrounds. His hair is pulled back, sooty brows pinched above his savage stare that clings to me, that casts a cord between my ribs, down into the depths of my icy internal lake where it snags something heavy and thrashing that I can't quite glimpse. I begin to tremble, my teeth clanking together so hard I'm surprised they don't shatter. I blame it on the fact that my skull is probably on the verge of cracking. It's certainly not something deeper. I'm not shaking like an egg threatening to hatch from this overwhelming surge of relief now packing my chest full. Relief that he's here. With me. That. It's definitely not that. Every other clan member aside from Hawk smacks their fists to their chests four times, the thumping clamor filling the crater with a drone of respect. Khan does it once. A vision of ruin and rage. His gaze shifts to the male still straddling me, his eyes blazing so full of flames I should be scared. Frightened. I'm not.
Dachatate rosker ni. Hue.
His dense, gravelly voice carries the foreign words with such carnal ferocity I feel each syllable abrade my pebbling skin. He smacks his fist against his chest again, this time splaying his hand, dragging his nails diagonally down his torso. Four distinct scratch marks bloom, risen and angry.
Gahtamai dat nanta, agtama.
The words cut like blades, making me wince. I don't have to understand the language to know the king is, well, pissed. Hawk rises, Khan's match in size.
Agath I tenai daltuga ata. Agath dine. Va. Luitaha matine.
He repeats Khan's motion, scratching his own skin, then again with his other hand, creating a welted X upon his heaving chest. Khan snarls.
Heel degzaran datarieri. Heel deg datarieri.
Hawk spits on the ground, repeats the clawing motion, then charges. Khan mimics, like two great mountains merging toward each other, clashing. I feel the motion like a boulder lobbed at my ribs. Heads pressed together, clenched hands firmly cast at their sides, they snarl. Such violent intimacy in their almost embrace that I'm certain the energy they're exuding has the power to cleave another crevice in the ground. Saiza is suddenly at my side with another female, both scooping me up, threading my arms around their necks and dragging me toward the tent.
What's being said? I slur past my clanking teeth, trying to blink away the haze beginning to cloud my vision.
Hawk is claiming the victory over your battle, despite the fact that you did not submit, Saiza says as I'm carried past the soul now making her way to Hawk and Khan in long, hip-rolling strides.
Khan is declaring you are not free to be claimed by anyone, that you were not raised in our ways and are not accustomed to such traditions. He is demanding the trial be void. As Hawk's Rosker, his greater, in your tongue. He is demanding Hawk accept his great victory over Zaran and step out of the battle ring to add a dot to his Raidi. Hawk, in turn, is challenging the Rosker Order and wants to battle Khan. If he wins, he will earn many more dots for his Raidi.
My heart dives, the thought of Khan battling Hawk to the death spawning something spiky and uncomfortable in my chest.
Khan is king of the burn, I force out. Hawk would dare to challenge the crown?
Your crowns mean little here. We claim part of no kingdom. Only the Raidi matters. We only pound chest 4 times for the Roskare, the greatest.
My brows collide, and I look over my shoulder at the snarling males still spitting words at each other.
If Khan is strongest, why is he not Oa?
He was, until his pa died, Saiza whispers when we reach the tent. He offered Uithrosker, second greatest, the bones of our ancestral Oas. Oa Nok has been a worthy Oa.
My gaze sways to Oa Nok as I'm helped onto the dais before I'm spun and settled upon the rug, the hurt on my temple dabbed at with something cold and damp. I sway, the scene before me splitting, converging, splitting again. Rygun reigns over the arena from his lofty perch on the edge, his mammoth size casting half the crater in shadow. Set amongst that fearsome, pronged face, his inky eyes trace Khan's every move with crushing intensity, not helped by the fact that he multiplies every time the world splits. I feel the opposite. There's not one single part of me that wants to watch this fight unfold. Just a slumber ago, I wouldn't have batted a lash at watching Khan Vagor have his head sawn off in an arena. Instead, I would have cheered. Now, even the thought makes me want to vomit. I don't understand it. Don't want to understand it. Don't want to watch.
Well,
I rasp, bringing a shaking hand up to feel the hurt on my head, frowning when my fingers come away bloody.
While they're occupied, how about I pretend to be dead and you throw me back in the river?
It is not that simple, I'm afraid.
That's not the right attitude to have.
The Fate Herder's gone,
I slur, looking around my wobbly surroundings, not seeing it anywhere.
I think it can be that simple if we believe hard enough.
She swipes some of the blood from my chest.
I do not think it is gone. I think it is just choosing not to be seen.
I frown, searching the crater, still trying to make sense of this faded mess. Failing. Every time I think I've got a grasp on it, the grains of understanding slip through the gaps between my fingers. If it wanted me dead, that would have been the moment. So what does it want?
You have a Valley Serpent bite, Saiza says, running the pad of her thumb over the 2 stinging prickles on the mound of my breast, all the color leaving her face.
Where did this come from?
Guess nobody saw Hawk flick his pocket python at me. Wonder how many other opponents have fallen victim to his vile, dishonorable methods. I don't respond, mainly because there's no point. It's done. The moment I no longer feel like I'm going to crumble if I stand, I'll launch back out there and hack off his head, then mulch his brain with my fist. Saiza's eyes widen, whipping toward the ring.
Gaskane, vil deshuva,
she sneers, her words so honed I swear they could slit skin. She stands and makes for the cluster of urns at my back, clanking around while she mutters beneath her breath. There's the sound of her stirring something before she presents me with a cup of chilled water, perhaps pulled from one of the ruined urns. Though it looks almost lumpy.
Drink this, Saiza instructs through gritted teeth, cutting another sharp glance in Huck's direction. I mixed the water with an antidote that gives it a strange feel, but it will counteract the venom in your system.
I dip my head in thanks, my features twisting as I sip down globs of this sour, jelly-like concoction, feeling the icy swallows seep through my bloodstream at a rapid pace, chilling me from the inside out, smoothing some of the wobbles from my mind. The soul crouches in the sand, pinches some between her fingers, then sprinkles it on her tongue just as I drain the rest of the mug in a single, face-scrunching gulp. Tipping her head, the soul begins chanting, reaching for the sky. She stops, slams her palms on the sand, grips two handfuls, then flicks her fists over so fast most of it sprays free. What's she doing?
Reading the will of the creators, Syza whispers, taking the empty cup from my hand.
Slowly, almost eerily, the soul loosens her fingers, milky eyes searching the grains left in her lax grasp.
Yathatain demavail setachte,
she says, her murmured words somehow echoing across the dusty expanse.
Hela atta anatalai.
A hush falls over the crowd, and Khan's face pales. He spears me through with a wide-eyed stare that chills me to the bone.
Did she say something bad?
The soul has announced that since blood has already been spilled in your honor, you must not leave this crater unclaimed. That if you do, more moons will fall in this place of ill-spilled blood, and the Jokol clan will lose our place of sanctuary. That many will perish. Her word is final.
My shudder abruptly stops, like every muscle in my body just pumped full of mortar. The ball in Khan's throat rolls, and he breaks from Hawk, holding my stare. He stalks toward me, his eyes taking on an empathetic softness as he pulls his Mjolnir off. My blood turns to ice. He falls to his knees before me and lowers his head between his shoulders, bowing so deep his back is bared, his cupped hands outstretched, cradling his beautiful Mjolnir. Silence. Even the wind stills its frantic stir. My heart lodges so far up my throat it's hard to breathe past. I look at the piece, at the dark saber scythe and silver moon plume tucked in their forever embrace, admiring the exquisite workmanship, the love he's poured into every dip and curve of the carving. A vision saddles me with such intensity my breath snags. Khan's Mjolnir resting between my naked breasts, my body slicked with sweat as I writhe in rippling pleasure, looking past my navel, down between my split thighs that are gripped by large, powerful hands, down to where Khan's ember eyes are blazing for me, his tongue laving at my... I pop the hallucination like a bubble, gasping for a rush of air that only succeeds in making my head spin, making it throb with a deeper, more painful hurt. No matter how hard I scrub the specter from my mind, I'm left with this oily residue of possession that slicks my insides. A single surety stakes my heart like the roots of a mountain range, impossible to shift. I want to accept that beautiful, dangerous object. Hold it. Cradle it close. If even for a little while. Fueled by that single blade of knowledge, ignoring its problematic implications, I'll battle another day once we're past this treacherous hurdle. I reach out, fingers wrapping around the Mjolnir and bringing it close to my chest. Something settles inside me like a key notched into place, though I don't look too close. Don't assess it. This isn't real. It's survival. Khan remains crouched before me, hands empty, holding the stance for so long the crowd begins to murmur. A few even gasp.
What's he doing?
He is asking for you to place your print upon his radi, Syza rasps, her voice hitched with awe. He is saying that he respects you above himself and, most importantly, above his honor.
My heart stills, eyes widen. I don't know what I've done to deserve that. That doesn't make any sense.
He is announcing you as his Rosker, his Greater. Should you accept this honor, his title will be passed to you should he fall this day.
Should he fall? A strange, piercing pain lances through my chest like a dagger plunged deep. My voice cracks, and I look at Syza, a question in my eyes that I hope she can see, certain that if I try to speak, everything will come out in strangled bits. What does it mean? Syza's eyes soften, and she places her hand upon my cheek, cupping it.
It means that if Khan loses, any decision you make will not be challenged. You can leave despite being claimed and receive no dishonor because you will be considered Hawk's Greater.
Every cell in my body charges with a current of thick, primal understanding. My next breath shuddered. He's ensuring I get out. No matter what. My gaze drops to the male before me, something swelling in the back of my throat that's hard to swallow past, and I realize just how right I was to run, to leave. He's much, much too easy to care about. Syza sweeps some of my own blood off my collarbone and uses it to paint my hand.
You may choose to print upon him and accept this great honor.
I crunch my hand into a fist, release, looking at my blood slicked across it, then at the Melmer caught in my other palm. I don't deserve this. Not one bit. But I also don't want to disrespect him by refusing his beautiful gesture that weighs so much more than I'm now certain this magnificent male thinks I'm worth. Silence reigns, and I battle to stuff those feelings down, wrestling them beneath my ribs while I look at the mural painted across his back, at the wonky moon half the size of my fist, like I could sweep it into my palms and cradle it. I fall toward it heart first, pressing my hand upon the moon I love so much. Khan trembles all over, the motion vibrating up my arm and into my heavy heart, making my breath hitch. He stands, too fast, too slow. Some strange, unfamiliar part of me wants to reach forward and grab him, scream for him to stay, beg him to live. He keeps his stare to the ground and raises his fist, strikes his chest 6 times, then spins, stalking toward the weapon rack to the tune of the gasping, murmuring crowd.
Rave. Chapter 43. Tension cuts the air, hundreds of stares scraping across my skin, delving beneath it. I scan the leering crowd, then look to Syza, her complexion pale, eyes bulging as she watches the king's retreat. Why 6?
I am not certain, she says. 5 for Oa. 6 is unheard of.
I swallow, tightening my hand around Khan's Melmer. He rummages through the weapons stacked upon a nearby rack, clunking things to the side, finally gripping the small knife I noticed earlier, the one with a maw's worth of tapered teeth mounted around the fringe of the flat blade. He passes it from hand to hand, grunts, then rips his boots off and tosses them aside.
Hatch Tanai, Raigan,
he growls, pointing to his beast, his stern words echoing off the crater's sheer walls.
Hatch Tanai, Akuchen.
I lean into Syza. What's he saying?
He is ordering Raigan to stand down, whatever the battle's outcome.
The last 4 words land like boulders upon my chest. Blazing eyes still pinned on Khan, the beast fills his chest with a breath he rumbles free, the sound so abrasive it packs the crater with a thick promise of fiery violence I understand perfectly. Too perfectly. Khan bellows another order.
Hak Tanai, Raigun. Hak!
Raigun stretches his wings, turns his face to the sky, and releases a searing screech, the sound accompanied by a mushroom of red flames that scorch and lick and flick at the powdery blue. Folks scream, crouching over their younglings to shelter them from the heat. Others dive upon the ground, as if that could save them if the massive dragon decided to tip his head and pour his flames into the crater. I also crouch, but for different reasons, binding myself into a ball as my skin illuminates with the remnants of a million wilted runes, turning such a stark shade. The light emitting from the old etchings rivals one of the moonplume moons perched within the shade's otherwise gloomy depths. I'm so crouched over myself, trying not to look too close at the residue of runes sketched across my skin, at the layers upon layers of tiny etchings used to stitch me together more times than there are moons in the sky to count, that I forget sizes beside me. At least until my eyes open and I catch her bulging perusal. Her gaze drifts up my body, meeting mine. My heart leaps into my throat, and I open my mouth to speak. No wonder you left, she says, then reaches behind me, flicking a blanket over my back and easing it around my shoulders. The unbreakable always do. I don't correct her. Don't tell her I've broken too many times to count. That I laughed because the pain I've felt in my heart eclipses any damage that could ever be inflicted upon my flesh and bones. Instead, I give her a dozy smile of thanks, tucking deep into the corded fabric as Raigun throws his fiery tantrum toward the sky, like he's trying to sizzle the moons. Seems he's more than displeased about being told what to do. To be fair, if I could rip off this iron cuff, I'd be taking fate into my own fucking hands. His flame snips off, and he shoves into the sky, bits of rock raining from where his claws were pierced into the crater's lip. He tills his massive wings, stirring the crater into a billowing gale, forcing us all to shield our faces from the whip of sand. He circles higher, higher, until he's far enough away that the clan's folk grow comfortable enough to unbundle themselves. My mouth dries as Khan stalks toward the crater's center, to where Hak has resumed his pacing, again wielding the same spiked mace he used to defeat Zaran. A spiked mace I picture swinging through the air with untraceable speed, colliding with the side of Khan's face, shattering his skull. I flinch, my body reviving its terrible tremble, more blood leaking down my temple. The antivenom is working hard to smooth the wobbly crinkles from my equilibrium, but not fast enough. Not fast enough. Even so, I force myself to my feet. Saiza leaps up to help me rise, acting as my post to lean against. The other female dabs at the wound on my head again, slathering it in something thick and potent while the males circle each other in prowling strides that trample through my chest. Finally, they charge, clashing in a bludgeoning bash of fiery rage, again and again, each meaty, growling collision ricocheting through my bones so hard I jolt. Skin splits, blood sprays, weapons turn wet and red. There is no rhythm to their rippling motions that remind me of cracking earth and shattering stones, of quakes that rattle the world hard enough to knock you off your feet. They're a chaotic dance of bulging muscle and feral regard I don't want to see, don't want to hear, my chest crushing a little more with each new scar slashed across Khan's beautiful skin. But despite the crippling sensation, I can't bring myself to look away. Saiza leans close. You should sit, Kolu. Your legs are shaking, and that cut on your head is losing a lot of blood. Khan fails to parry another swinging attack that lacerates the air, hacking shreds of skin from his abdomen. A strangled scream slips up my throat and his bloodshot stare latches onto me as something painful grubs through my chest like a flesh-eating worm. My knees give way. Saiza lowers me to the rug, while Huck rains upon the king in a flourish of deadly strikes. As I cling to Khan's Malmer like the motion alone could hold his body together and protect him from the advancing blows that don't stop coming. Snarling, Khan reaches into the swinging mass of lethal force, eating a spiked blow to the chest in order to snatch Hawk's arm, and I think another sharp sound wrestles up my throat. I think it might be his name. I think I might have ordered him to live. Hissing blood through clenched teeth, Khan drags his toothy weapon through Hawk's inner bicep, severing the bulge of muscle with a splash of red. The mace drops to the sand. Hawk roars. Khan roars louder, stepping around the monstrous male and fisting his hair, ripping his head back far enough to bear Hawk's throat in my direction. My heart stops, the rest of the world smudging into oblivion. Holding my stare, he lifts his toothy, bloody weapon to the stretch of flesh and saws. A breath shudders into me. Huck's screams start fierce and frantic before tapering into a gurgled groan as his throat is severed in messy, bone-grinding increments, plumes of blood ribboning down his jerking chest like a ruddy aurora. His body drops. Head stays. Something warm slips from my eyes, drips down my cheeks. Khan steps over Hawk's motionless mass and stalks toward me, chewing up the space between us, still fisting Hawk's hair as the world begins to split and sway. Split and sway. Khan reaches me, teeth bared, his ravaged chest leaking blood. He lumps Hawk's head on the ground before my low dais, and I feel that same weight thump within me, a choked sound wriggling past my trembling lips. I drop my stare, taking in the rough, weeping sever of flesh around Hawk's neck, his wide-open eyes, his mouth caught in a perpetual scream I'm certain I'll never stop hearing, the very reason I snipped their breath. Khan drops into my line of sight like a crouching dragon, having just proved he's every bit capable of being the monster I thought he was. But right now, I feel only cold, plunging relief. I cast a noose around that delicate, vulnerable feeling, hang it from one of my ribs where I can look at its rotting corpse whenever I feel my heart doing the fluttering thing it's doing right now. Because that's what happens when I get attached in any way at all. Death. I look into Khan's devastating eyes, a darkness toiling within the fiery depths that's so unhinged it brings me a strange sense of calm, makes me feel a little less alone in this fucked up world. I lift his Malmer and drag the leather loop over my head, settling the heavy carving between my breasts. That darkness deepens, boldens. A rumbling sound boils in his chest, planting a seed of ease in me, even as my world sways with so much violence my entire body flops with the motion. He catches me, lifts me, tucks me close to his chest. Then his steps are thumping, thumping. Or perhaps that's Rygun's wings. I become quietly aware of the shadow, the wind, of the fierce, feral roar that tears at the air, and the fact that we're likely leaving. I settle my hand on Khan's chest, finding comfort in the heavy pound of his heart, my eyes prying open just in time to see a silver smudge clawing up the crater's side. Leaving. Something else I decide not to assess too closely, certain that line of thought can only lead to more pain, suffering, loss.
Moonbeam.
Hmm?
Please don't scare me like that again.
Scare? What a nice thing to say. You shouldn't spend such lovely words on me, sire, I murmur groggily, wishing I didn't find such comfort in his scent, in the feel of his arms wrapped around me. In him. You should save them for somebody special. His guttural growl is the last thing I hear before darkness consumes me.
Diary entry. Elowen Nevon, age 18 phases, 5,039 phases after stone. Slotra flew across the Boltenic Plains while I was strapped to the saddle of a molten maw, begging for one of the blue beads to summon a cloud of moisture and shelter her from the sun's singeing rays. The rider ignored every word, every plea, every fucking scream. She followed me all the way to Dom, her silver flesh bubbling and bursting, flying until her wings had too many holes to maintain her soar. She plummeted, and I felt what was left of my heart rip from my chest and plummet with her, hopeless and powerless as she crawled across the burning dunes, making keening sounds I'll never be able to unhear. Nor will I be able to unsee the milky sheen of her eyes from staring at the sun while she screeched over and over again. I doubt a healer will be able to help her regain her vision, nor do I expect her to trust anyone to get close enough to try. I certainly wouldn't, nor would I have blamed her if she never let me cuddle her again. But she did. The moment she balled up in the safety of a hutch near the Imperial stronghold, she tucked me so close to her chest that I could feel the fluttering thump of her heart, barely clinging on. For me. Of that, I'm certain. She didn't want to leave me here alone. I almost begged her to solidify around me and take our pain away. King Ostern agreed to let me sleep in the hutch with her, so long as its entrance is heavily guarded. Don't know why he bothers. We both know I'd never leave this place without Slotra. Since I donned the Aether Stone, I can no longer summon a cloud for long enough to escort her back across the plains, meaning I'm stuck here in this hot, humid place while my kingdom is run by a vile male I did not choose for myself. A horror that pales in comparison to the pain I feel whenever I look at my beautiful, broken moon plume. I'll never forgive myself for climbing upon her back all those phases ago, for riding her until she listened to me, trusted me. I'll never forgive myself for taking her from her home. I'd do anything to go back to mine again.
Khan. Chapter 45. I fold forward over Rave's too limp body before we plunge, spearing through a clot of cloud. We shred free with a flick of Rygon's wings, the jungle-encrusted mountains rolling by beneath us much slower than I'd like them to. Hast Atan, Gavdaka. Faster, my friend. Rygon's raging adrenaline churns in my chest, making me feel like I'm burning from the inside out. Hast Atan, Rygon! He roars, blowing a plume of ruddy flames through a web of low-hanging clouds, dissolving them. The mountain range comes to a lofty head, and he chases the updraft with a pump of his wings, slingshotting over the rounded peak crowned with the domed lookout housing several saber sights and a molten maw. Their riders blow horns in sharp bursts to hail our arrival, and I finally sight the loft, stretched far as my eyes can see. I consume the vast, unpredictable body of water like the welcomed relief it is, Rygon roaring to the constellation of spiked saber-scythe moons peppered above the glistening turquoise depths. To the molten maw moons, too, though only a few. Home. Relief loosens some of the weight stacked inside my chest. Almost there, I murmur, close to Raev's hooded head, as Raigun cuts so close to the lookout, I'm certain his tail skims the roof. He tucks his wings and plummets down the cliff's sheer face toward the burn's sheltered capital, packed around the sloping shore. Like Baldur took a blade to the bulbous summit and sliced a cove wide enough to cradle the second largest city in the world. Sunshine batters the auburn dwellings, rounded like the mountains they spawned from. Folk yelling from the veined walkways, waving. Younglings jump up and down, arms stretched as they hoot and roar and pretend to soar across the cobblestones. Raigun aims for the imperial stronghold that oversees it all, protruding from the mountain like a growth, pocked with stained glass windows and open archways, clothed in vines heavy with the black ukka blooms Ma loved so much. Pa used to have them hacked back, but not me. They have my permission to swallow the city. The entire kingdom. Raigun lowers us toward a flat landing patch, the balmy air rich with the smell of salt and braised meat. I brace around Raev as Raigun drops his weight upon the ground, packing so much heft a cleft forms in the stone I'll have to patch up later. I throw my leg over the saddle, my heart dropping, when I see Veya jog through a domed doorway, her long brown hair tossed about by the wind. She's garbed in her ever-present riding leathers I suspect she fucking sleeps in, wearing a broad smile that disappears the moment her stare cuts across the blood I'm wearing, the female tucked against my chest. Shit, I murmur, working my way down the ropes. I love her welcomes, treasure them, but for the first time in my life I would have happily gone without it, just so I can get inside the door without... Who's that? My salvation, and the very reason you're probably going to cut me with your pocket blade before I even make it into the stronghold. I leap down the final few rungs and land upon the stone, scouring Raigun's leathered hide.
Glathayun, dear Raigun. Hakar, Glachdelai. Thank you, Raigun. Bathe, replenish, rest.
He releases an ear-splitting screech and bounds into the sky, slamming us with a gust of wind that whips at Rave's thick black braid hanging free from the cloak I draped her in to protect her from the sun.
Khan, who's in your creator's damn arms?
I turn, storming toward the doorway. I love you, Veya, but I can't do this here. I need Agni. Now. I'm almost through when Veya screams at me from behind, her voice so shrill I picture a blade whirring toward me.
Khan Luke Vagor! Tell me who that is, or I will fill your palate with herky beetles every slumber for the rest of your long miserable existence. So fucking help me!
I blow out a sigh and turn. Cutting me another sharp look, she steps close, gaze dropping. She tugs back the hood, eases Rave's blood-soaked hair aside, and gasps. I look down, my heart dropping at the sight of Rave's face, her skin so pale it's almost translucent. My chest stirs full of flames. Her features are too lax, thick lashes fanned across bruised cheeks, her plump lips barely parted. Not pursed with rage. Not peeling back with a lashing sneer. Not battling a smile, as it did when I poked my tongue at her. Veya's trembling fingers dance around Rave's face. Like she wants to touch her, like she's afraid she'll disappear if she does. A feeling I know too well. I look to where a patch of dressing covers the deep gash in the side of her head, a gash that follows the same trail as the scar I saw via Dragonflame. More blood has seeped through the dressing since I checked last.
Fuck.
Perhaps finally noticing that some of the blood on Rave's body has been painted on, Veya cuts me a glance, then peels the cloak farther back, revealing Rave's red silk attire, revealing my Malmer draped around her neck. The carving rested upon her blood-slicked chest. Veya stumbles back a step, her wide, tear-puddled eyes condemning me.
How?
She's wounded, I rumble, tucking the cloak back into place to protect her modesty for my impending charge through the halls. I stopped by Amender's hut on the way, but they only had the expertise to stabilize her for the journey here. Veya swallows, nods once, then dashes a tear off her cheek, not meeting my gaze as she rasps.
Come, I just passed Agni on her way to the feasting hall.
I charge through lofty tunnels lit with flaming sconces, Veya keeping pace. We storm past mercenaries who flatten themselves against the walls, right fists thumping against their chests.
Ach, Atinda,
many of them yell as we pass, packing the air with the clamor of welcome and respect. We barrel down another lengthy tunnel, the stronghold almost the size of the city itself, a city within itself, tunneling into the mountain range, spilling out in cleverly hidden clefts farther down the mountain range. Enough space to house the entire cavalry, their families, and the dragons of those who have charmed one. There was a time when the entire place was maintained for the imperial family alone, but I filled it with enough noise to drown out the plague of silence after I tore Pa's head from his shoulders and took the city, haunted by the ghost of her. Blood rained, the loaf blushed, and Rygon feasted that day. I thought it would make me feel better. It didn't. We round a corner, storming into the rowdy clatter and chatter of the feasting hall as Pyrock exits the wide open doorway with a mug of molten mead in his big fist. His blaze of rebellious locks is a fucking mess as usual, hanging around his scar-riddled shoulders, black piercings through his nipples, lip, septum, and lobe. He looks me up and down, whistles low, and spins, charging back into the hall.
Mealtime's over! Grab your plates and get the fuck out! Yes, you too! No, not you. You stay right where you are, Agni dearest. Your miraculous skills are required.
Nice of him to be helpful for a change. Guess we look worse than I thought. I barge through the doorway in time to see him reach over the long stone table, using his arm as a sweep to shove everything down the far end. Copper plates, cutlery, and chalices clattering to the ground, splashing mead and meat and flaps of spiced dapa bread all over the stone. Folk scatter, exiting the vast hall in a silent riot I barely notice, heading for the half-empty table lit by a single jagged blade of sun slicing through the cleft in the roof. I lay Rave's listless body on it, directly before a wide-eyed Agni. Her white runy cloak, such a contrast to her dark skin. More than 20 gold, silver, or diamond buttons lining the middle seam. A boast of her vast accolades, even more than her sister, Bia. Agni looks between the still weeping gashes on my chest and the bloody dressing on Rave's brow. Her first. Please. She nods, tucking a lock of brown hair behind her ear before she peels the cloak away and examines Rave's battered body, clicking her tongue. I look at Pyrock.
Can you find Rowan? The extra pair of hands could help.
Can't, he says, twirling the piercing through his bottom lip. He's not here.
Where?
Bothaim. Trying to get a look at that book again. He's certain there are more pages that haven't been transcribed and released to the public. I sigh. Pyrock shrugs.
You ask me, the place has been awfully peaceful without my nagging brother around. And you.
I glare at him as he chugs his mead. Agni lifts the dressing to inspect Rave's gnarly wound, shaking her head. "The bone is fissured," she murmurs, poking at the gape of skin in a way that makes me want to vomit. "I'll have to melt her skull smooth again before I thread her flesh. She's very lucky this didn't kill her." I would have split the world if it did. Then split my fucking self. She uses the dressing to blot at the wound. "Someone will need to get me a cloth and a pail of water and fetch my kit. Pyrok, you look like you need a job. Is this all her blood?" Surprisingly, Pyrok jogs from the room like something's nipping at his heels, though not before casting an assessing stare between me and Veya. The latter, standing over the other side of the table, gaze narrowed on me like an arrow notched and aimed. "No," I say, holding Veya's stare. "A lot of it is Kolk blood, my blood and the blood of another male."
"You fucking bastard,"
Veya growls, then launches across the table at me, arms swinging. I let her get 3 good hits to my jaw, gut, and the fucking wounds on my chest before I snatch her wrists and shove her toward Grimm, who'd silently eased off the back wall the moment she started speaking. With a big pale hand wrapped around her wrists, he bands his other arm across her chest, looking at me through a flop of snow-toned hair that mostly hides his icy eyes, the tick in his square jaw pulsing, the only sign the male ever gives that he's on edge. Veya snarls, looking up at me with the ferocity of an uncharmed adolescent saber scythe, eyes blazing, upper lip peeled back from bared canines, failing to jerk out of Grimm's hold.
"How could you take her to that place?"
"The gorge took her to that place," I growl, wiping a wad of blood off my lip. "I got there just in time."
"She's dressed in the garb of a Tuka trial, Khan. A Tuka trial."
"Well aware, Veya."
"Who was the mayor?"
"Hawk." Shadows cloud her eyes, and she stiffens.
"Good,"
she fires, no longer wrestling Grimm. Not that he lets her go. Not that she asks him to. She lifts her chin.
"How did she kill him?"
Rage crackles through my veins like crumbling embers as I fail to shake the image of Rave sprawled on the sand, covered in blood, straddled by a male who had every intention of claiming her as his own. As I fail to shake the image of her laughing, like she was mocking her impending death. "You shouldn't spend such lovely words on me, sire." Fuck. I crunch my hands into fists. "She didn't." Veya's eyes narrow on the Malmer around Rave's neck, then widen.
"Creators."
I grunt. Another pulse of stone-crushing energy shooting through my veins. My muscles. I intercept Pyrok as he re-enters the room. Taking the pail, I use the damp cloth to clean around Rave's wound, then wipe the blood off her face while Pyrok helps Agni spread her tinctures across the table. When he looks up again, he stills, the jar that was in his hand dropping to the ground. Shattering.
"Who in the creator's damn fuck is that? And why does she look like Elohim Nivan? She's dead,"
he says, looking from me to Veya to Grimm, his skin turning just as pale as the latter.
"Am I the only one that thinks I'm going mad right now?"
"No." Agni looks between us like we're all mad, dabbing some purple liquid on a piece of cloth and patting it over Rave's mouth. "She doesn't know herself as Elohim," I mutter, slopping my cloth back in the pail and dragging both hands through my hair, pulling it back off my face. to her, she's Rive. And she has no recollection of anything prior to the past 23 phases. My words echo through the hall, taunting me.
Well, fuck,
Pyrok murmurs.
You sure they're one and the same? That you didn't just bring some poor stray home because she looks like Eluine? You think I'd do that?
I growl. He shrugs.
Seen some crazy shit over the past eon, not gonna lie.
I clear my throat. Granted. It's her. Any doubt I might have had was squashed the moment she told the High Chancellor of the Fade he has a microcock, and at her own murder hearing. There's a stretch of silence before Pyrok chuckles, snatching some random chalice off the table.
I'll toast to that.
He drains the vessel, slamming it back on the table.
Hate that dusty old piece of shit.
If she has no recollection, Veya says with slow, steady precision, how do you explain the fact that she calls herself by her middle name?
I shake my head. I don't know, Veya.
Then how is she here, alive?
I don't know that either. A line forms between her brows, the stain of frustration I feel in my marrow.
Well, what are her first memories of this life?
Another shake of my head. Veya finally loosens from Grimm's grip, the latter crossing his arms over his broad chest, gaze firmly cast on my sister, stalking toward me with war raging in her bloodshot eyes.
Do you know anything?
Fuck all. The only time I tried to pry, she compared my cock to the size of my brain. I bite out, unfavorably. Some of the anger drains from Veya's eyes, the corner of her mouth twitching as Pyrok chuckles. I slice him a glare, and he drowns the sound in another guzzle of someone else's mead. He won't be laughing when she cuts those sharp teeth on him. Agni hands Pyrok the purple blotched cloth.
Wave this in front of her nose every few moments. I don't want her rousing mid-etching, and your hands look like they need something better to do than drink everyone else's mead.
Agni, you know perfectly well how good I am at multitasking, Pyrok says, flashing her a grin.
Agni's cheeks flush, and she shakes her head, muttering beneath her breath.
Where did you find her?
Veya asks, seemingly immune to the shit coming out of Pyrok's mouth. I stumbled upon her at the Hungry Hollow, but her face was half hidden. I thought I was going mad. Still do. I later found her rotting in a cell. I scrub my beard as Agni paints a bonding agent over the snowy flesh I've kissed more times than I can count. A truth tune confirmed she had no prior recollection of me before our chance encounter. None.
So she doesn't know about?
No, I say, cutting Veya off. She opens her mouth, closes it, shaking her head.
And you're certain you watched Slatra?
On her life, I growl, my words bouncing off the walls like one of Rygon's rumbling exhales. Saw it. Lived with the bruising memory for the past 123 phases. While sleeping and awake. I'll never outlive the vision nor the jagged cleft of pain that broke through my chest at the sight. Even with her here, on this table, breathing. I'll wake up from this utopia eventually. I'm sure of it. I'll jerk up off my pallet and realize it was all one vicious, beautiful dream. Veya moves around the table and tucks Rive's hair back from her pointed ear, the one that's clipped into.
She bears the southern mark of a null, she frowns, inspecting both lobes. No beads, not even a hole for them to hang off. Do the creators still speak with her?
Claude and Boulder, I say,
crossing my arms over my ravaged chest, though I'm not sure about the other two. Straightening, she mimics my stance, twice as fierce but half the size. Her veins flow with Nevan blood, Khan, and she wears no song-silencing ether stone. If Tyroth finds out she's here, he'll be blowing flames upon our doorstep before we've had a chance to properly prepare. He'd be stupid not to, and we both know he's far from stupid. I'm well aware of the risks. She cocks her head to the side. Well, what are you going to do? I don't know. But if you want to talk about war strategy, now is not the time. I'm tired. Angry. Bleeding. Hungry. I have a million things to attend to, and only one I'm interested in. My gaze flicks to Rave, Agni beside her, mixing tinctures, preparing for the procedure. Are you afraid she'll see him and remember him? Veya asks, her narrowed stare like iron arrows shot straight through my chest. Leave you again? That the note was true? I don't let her see how much the words sting. How I feel them punch through one side, shred muscle, sinew, and bone, then burst out the other. Yes. Yes. Fucking yes. But I lost the right to be greedy with her. I watch Agni work. Pyrok, juggling between his Mender Aid duties and guzzling pilfered mead. She's a dream come true. But she's not just my dream, I say, packing the space full of truth-laden stones. Not anymore. Even the air seems to still, and an eerie quiet blankets the room, gnawing at me from all angles. I look at my bloody hands, stretch them out, inspect both sides before I crunch them into balls. She's so much more than a power play. So much more than the love of my existence. There's someone out there who needs her more than any of us do, and it's not our fucking brother. I growl, looking straight into Veya's glazed eyes. She blinks, and a tear slides down her cheek. I will slowly, gently ease her into the truth, painful as it is. Then she can choose her own path, make her own choices, come what may. Veya drops her stare to the floor as another tear drips down her cheek. I look away. She never cries, so when she does, it feels like the world is cracking. Like I've failed to protect her. Again. My hands loosen. Fist, again, trembling with a crushing amount of untethered energy. Agni uses a metal tool to cleave Rive's wound wider, giving her direct access to the fissure in her skull so she can first mend the bone. I look away from that, too, wanting to crush the image from my memory. But its claws are already in, digging deep. I'll be back, I mutter. Then jerk my chin at Grimm and make for the door, expecting Veya's final hit well before it lands.
Nobody can suffer what she's been through and not be pitted with a well of dragon flame. Whether she remembers her past or not. Tread carefully, Khan, or she'll incinerate herself and turn to ash in your fucking hands.
I growl, charging down the hall, chased by the heavy thump of Grimm's boots.
I know. Khan. Chapter 46. I stalk down tunnel after tunnel,
The air chilled by glowing runes etched onto the curves of russet stone, flaming sconces shrieking at me as I charge past. Those who can't hear Ignos probably think flames are happy to be alive, no matter their size. Wrong. A candlestick flame will stretch and squirm in the presence of anyone who wanders by, screaming for more sustenance to burn, desperate to grow. Ignos doesn't like being small and unimpressive. He craves rugs to singe, forests to obliterate, fields of dry grass to rip across. I call a small flame to my hand, and it writhes in my palm with hissing excitement as I pass mercenaries shoving against walls, fists thumping against bare or garbed chests.
Ach, attenda! Ach, attenda! Ach, attenda!
Their respectful bellows drone into oblivion, paling in comparison to the rage rumbling through my bones, heating my blood, licking against my organs with fiery malice. I haven't slept in cycles. Not since before I woke to Rive straddling me, one of Rygun's scales poised at my throat, her eyes flared with the promise of a death I'd rather have at her hand than anyone else's. Before they softened. Before I caught a glimpse of something. A tender emotion that split my chest, made me think her memories are in there. Somewhere. Fucking somewhere. The aurora rose and fell 3 times while Rygun beat across the plains to get us here as fast as he could. And still I don't crave sleep. A rabid amount of energy thumping through my veins, pumping my muscles full, making me picture blood on my hands, fingers shredding flesh, bones snapping beneath my tight grip. Grimm's heavy steps echo mine as I crack my knuckles, turning down the wide stairwell that spills into a dusky training ring. I whisper my flame into segments that flit through the air, latching onto the flammable heads of many wall torches, engulfing them in hissing shrieks, casting the wide, round, rough-hewn cavern in a rage of amber light. I didn't craft this space with gentle precision. The ceiling isn't high or paved in grandeur,